Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 745, Wiki Fascism Part 2. This program is being recorded on June 12th of the year 2011. This program is an update not only on the WikiLeaks network, but specifically on some of the fascist elements that appear to be deeply involved with the network, and as we're going to be seeing, courtesy of some documents that were emails that were unearthed by Expo. That is the Swedish anti-fascist magazine founded by the late Stig Larsson. Something of an aside. And that concerns the remarkable way in which the WikiLeaks investigation, WikiLeaks began in, well, I shouldn't say began, but WikiLeaks had been geographically centered, I guess one could say, in Sweden, and specifically had been utilizing servers and data centers that were associated with the Pirate Bay site. Pirate Bay is a BitTorrent protocol file sharing site, and that in turn, although the people involved with the Pirate Bay would, rather like the anonymous folks who overlap them, would be probably more, would probably be accurately described as anarcho-utopian, perhaps. Although, obviously, people who are anonymous, they certainly would be anything but fascists. Yet, when one begins digging into this network, one finds, as the principal financial underwriter of the Pirate Bay Network, none other than Carl Lundstrom. Lundstrom is also the chief financier of the Sweden Democrats, the Swedish populist-slash-fascist party that has been garnering a considerable political capital from their anti-immigrant stance. And in turn, the aforementioned Carl Lundstrom is inextricably linked with a Swedish Nazi and anti-Semitic milieu, of which a fellow named Joran Jermas, that's his current legal name, he publishes generally under the name Israel Shamir. Carl Lundstrom and Israel Shamir, as we looked at in For the Record 732, Wiki Fascism, it's actually a longer title than that, but in 732 we took a look at the extent to which the WikiLeaks operation is inextricably linked with what I call the pirate vortex, not only Pirate Bay, but the associated pirate parties in various European countries. Again, I want to stress in the most emphatic fashion, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing either the Pirate Bay folks or the anonymous folks as fascist. If anything, they would be opposed to something like that. Yet, one always wants to count one's buttons before doing them up. And at the core of the ostensibly free file-sharing utopian Pirate Bay milieu, one not only finds Carl Lundstrom, whose 40% stake in that would give him a controlling economic interest, but way down deep inside of, well, not way down deep inside, but as one begins digging into the pirate vortex, one comes across the fact that it was apparently Pirate Bay was incorporated in an offshore corporate front in the Seychelles Islands, and the apparent thrust of some of the people involved, and one would probably cast Carl Lundstrom in this context, the basic thrust was to ultimately develop the BitTorrent protocol as a corporate and money-making entity. Again, those goals would be the opposite, or certainly at variance with what the Pirate Bay file sharers folks would be into, and certainly what the anonymous people would be into. But again, when one begins digging into what actually lies behind WikiLeaks, one comes across the pirate vortex, and as one begins digging into that, one finds Nazi and fascist elements at the financial level, corporate, offshore corporate fronts in the Seychelles Islands, and again, the stated intention, apparently, to use the BitTorrent protocol as a corporate money-making entity. At one point, Pirate Bay was sold to a Swedish gaming firm. That, in turn, led to charges of insider trading. It remains to be seen just exactly what takes place with regard to the sale and corporate and commercial utilization of the BitTorrent protocol. But we should note that, first of all, as something of an aside, Carl Lundstrom proposed moving the entire Pirate Bay operation to Argentina, which should come as no surprise to a Nazi financier. We've noted in past discussion of Carl Lundstrom that his money came from the sale of the family business, which was a cracker business, to the Sandoz company, and they find related elements. Sandoz, the best known probably as the manufacturer of LSD, the original manufacturer and discoverer of LSD. Sandoz is part of the old IG Farben Nexus, and the IG Farben Nexus is inextricably linked with the Bormann Capital Network, the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground. In Expo, again, that is the anti-fascist magazine founded by the late Stieg Larsson. Those of you who've seen the books, or read the books or seen the movies, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the girl who kicked the hornet's nest, and The Girl Who Played with Fire, I have those out of order. Those are three movies that came out last summer, and they also are being made into American films. They were based on three of the novels, the Millennium series, by the late Stieg Larsson. The Millennium magazine in those books and movies is basically derived from the magazine Expo, the Swedish anti-fascist magazine that was developed by Stieg Larsson. And it is in a way fitting that one of the definitive additions to this investigation should come from Expo, founded by the late Stieg Larsson. So wherever you are, Mr. Larsson, a tip of the hat to you. It now turns out that, as I suspected, the emergence of Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, as a key WikiLeaks, arguably the key WikiLeaks spokesperson vis-a-vis Russia and some of the other countries that emerged from the former Soviet Union, and also his son, Johannes Wallström, as the key WikiLeaks liaison person to Scandinavia, the fact that these two individuals with Nazi and anti-Semitic views and connections would emerge in an institution, or should emerge as being involved with an institution like WikiLeaks, which would be ostensibly anything but fascist or Nazi, at least in its superficial representations, and in turn, the fact that WikiLeaks hooked up with Pirate Bay. Again, anything but fascist and Nazi, but when one digs into what underlies Pirate Bay, one finds a Nazi/fascist financier. It now turns out that Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, was deeply involved with the establishment of WikiLeaks in Sweden. We have yet to, I think, come across the definitive information or the information that really gives us the clue as to the network that is being alluded to here. But it now turns out, courtesy of the Swedish magazine, the Swedish anti-fascist magazine Expo, that Shamir/Jermas was deeply involved with the establishment of the WikiLeaks network in Sweden and perhaps elsewhere as well. My Swedish isn't very good, and the internet translations are, as is generally the case, leave a lot to be desired. The Jewish Chronicle, a respected British Jewish publication founded in 1841, had what for radio purposes is a readable translation of these documents. An article by Martin Bright from June 2nd of 2011 called Revealed, Anti-Semite Was Key to WikiLeaks Operation, discusses just how significantly Jermas/Shamir was involved with the setting up of WikiLeaks. And I think the setting up here below we should really put in Sweden. It may go beyond that, but it certainly has a lot to do with in the establishment of WikiLeaks in Sweden was certainly very much the work of Joran Jermas. And I ruminated in the past saying I thought it was highly unlikely that Carl Lundstrom's presence at the epicenter of the Pirate Bay vortex, or the Pirate Vortex, and the inextricable link that WikiLeaks has to the pirate vortex and the fact that someone from the same Nazi and anti-Semitic milieu in Sweden as Carl Lundstrom, namely Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Göran Jermas, and his son Johannes Wallström, turn up as key WikiLeaks spokespersons, I speculated that that was not, in all probability, a coincidence, and indeed it was not. Again, from the Jewish Chronicle article from June 2nd of 2011, revealed, anti-Semite was key to WikiLeaks operation, reads in part, the notorious anti-Semitic journalist Israel Shamir was actively involved in developing the WikiLeaks network and was not just another freelance writer who happened to strike up a working relationship with the website's founder, Julian Assange, according to newly revealed correspondence. Emails seen by the Swedish anti-racist magazine Expo demonstrate that the two men cooperated for several years. As early as 2008, Mr. Shamir was asked to recommend potential associates in Sweden. He suggested his own son, Johannes Wallström. Quote, he is a Swedish citizen and lives in Sweden. Probably, he'll be able to give us advice about press freedom. Unquote. Like his father, Wallström has developed a reputation for strident anti-Semitic views as well. In 2005, the left-wing magazine Ordfront was forced to withdraw one of his articles, which argued that Israel controlled the Swedish media. An email from June of 2010 shows that Mr. Shamir was still playing a part in the Swedish WikiLeaks network at that point. I have a lot of good guys, quote, I have a lot of good guys who can help to analyze the treasure, and it would be good to start spreading the news, he told Mr. Assange, again quoting, I am now in Paris and people want to know more. Tuesday, I go to Sweden, and there is a whole operation for your benefit, unquote. Mr. Assange replied, there certainly is. Tell the team to get ready. Give them my best. We have a lot of work to do, unquote. So it would appear from this that Göran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, was at the foundation of the establishment of WikiLeaks in Sweden. And again, WikiLeaks operations in Sweden and elsewhere are inextricably linked with the Pirate Vortex, not only the Pirate Bay site per se, but also with the associated pirate parties, which are in existence in a number of European countries. I would also note, as will be in the description for the record 745, Sweden was the country with the largest number of Bormann flight capital fronts. We're going to talk about that, time permitting, later on in the broadcast, but there were 233 Bormann front companies in Sweden, an officially neutral country. That was greater than the number of Bormann flight capital fronts set up in any other country. Among the associates of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, who has since broken with the organization and become something of a whistleblower, is a fellow who used to be a key WikiLeaks spokesperson operating under the name of Daniel Schmidt. His name actually is Daniel Domscheit Berg, D-O-M-S-C-H-E-I-T hyphen B-E-R-G. He has written a book called Inside WikiLeaks, subtitled My Time with Julian Assange at the World's Most Dangerous Website. And in that, there is a discussion of more. Well, there's a discussion of quite a few things. We're going to excerpt a number of different portions of from the book Inside WikiLeaks, by the way, published in hardcover by Crown, which is an imprint of Random House, owned, by the way, by Bertelsmann. There is more about the relationship between Julian Assange and Israel Shamir. It not only dates back several years, but apparently, according to Domscheit Berg, Julian Assange was fully aware of the nature of the people with whom he was associating. It's not like he basically had the wool pulled over his eyes. More about the relationship between Jermas Shamir and Julian Assange. This from Daniel Domscheit Berg, a.k.a. Daniel Schmidt, from the book Inside WikiLeaks. What's more, people are now apparently traveling the world offering unreleased dispatches to other media outlets. One of these people is Johannes Wallström from Sweden. Wahlstrom is the son of Israel Shamir, a notorious anti-Semite and Holocaust denier of Russian-Israeli extraction. Kristen Harfnesson, WikiLeaks' new official spokesman, has described both Wahlstrom and Shamir as belonging to WikiLeaks. Once, he described to me things Shamir had written as very clever, really, he being Julian Assange. I think Julian is aware of the sort of people he's associating himself with. There's been contact with Shamir, at least, for years. When Julian first learned about Shamir's political background, he considered whether he might be able to work for WikiLeaks under a pseudonym. So apparently, according to Domscheit Berg, in any event, Assange was fully aware of the Nazi and fascist character of Jormas slash Shamir's, well, his political outlook. And again, it appears that Jormas slash Shamir had much to do with the establishment of WikiLeaks in Sweden. By the way, we should not fail to lose sight of the fact that somebody who has had a major presence in Sweden is Karl Rove, who for the last 10 years has been the advisor to the Prime Minister of Sweden, whom himself is known as the Ronald Reagan of Europe. Inside WikiLeaks, Domscheit Berg thinks there are a number of interesting questions that need to be answered about WikiLeaks. A number of these are questions I myself asked some months ago, about a year ago. And I would note that one of the questions concerns just exactly what Shamir and Wahlstrom are doing. Also, are they selling WikiLeaks material? If so, where is the money going? Returning once again to some of the questions asked near the end of Inside WikiLeaks by Daniel Domscheit Berg. From the outside, it looks as though Wahlstrom has passed on the cables to various media outlets in Scandinavia, while his father has assumed responsibility for the Russian market. Although WikiLeaks' 5 chosen media partners have repeatedly denied buying access to the leaks, the Norwegian newspaper Aftenposten outright admitted to paying for a look at the cables. All the other newspapers, including some Russian ones, have refused to provide any information about possible deals with WikiLeaks. So what are Wahlstrom and Jormas slash Shamir doing? Are they collecting monies from news outlets to see the WikiLeaks cables? Is WikiLeaks aware of this? Have they made any attempt to discipline Wahlstrom and Jormas slash Shamir? And also, where is that money going? The association of Julian Assange with people like Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jeremas and Johannes Wahlstrom, and by extension, looming in the background of the pirate vortex, is sort of the king spider, which is Carl Lundstrom. As it eventually developed, the sorts of views that Joran Jeremas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir and Johannes Wahlstrom, hold are not necessarily antithetical or repugnant to Julian Assange. Indeed, since his indictment in Sweden, allegedly for sexual improprieties committed against a couple of women, he's, I guess, technically been charged with rape, but I want to note that Sweden's rape laws are different from ours, and that if a man fails to use a condom in Sweden when asked to, that could constitute rape. So their laws are a little bit different, but ever since Assange was indicted in Sweden, which he claims was due to pressure by the Pentagon, CIA, etc., Julian Assange has been mouthing off about how he was the victim of a Jewish conspiracy. The New York Times of March 1st of 2011, reviewing from a previous broadcast, Julian Assange was especially angry about a private eye report that Israel Shamir, an Assange associate in Russia, was a Holocaust denier. Parenthetically, Shamir slash Jeremas has said, quote, and this was a public statement, "It is the duty of all good Christians and Muslims to deny the Holocaust," unquote. He's also an associate of the Nordic House or Nordska Nazi publisher, as is Carl Lundstrom. One more time from the New York Times article. "He was especially angry about a private eye report that Israel Shamir, an Assange associate in Russia, was a Holocaust denier. Mr. Assange complained that the article was part of a campaign by Jewish reporters in London to smear WikiLeaks. A lawyer for Mr. Assange could not immediately be reached for comment, but in a statement later released on the WikiLeaks Twitter feed, Mr. Assange said Mr. Hislop had, quote, distorted, invented, or misremembered almost every significant claim and phrase. The Private Eye article quoted Mr. Assange as saying the conspiracy was led by The Guardian and included the newspaper's editor, Alan Rusbridger, and an investigations editor, David Lee, as well as John Kampfner, a prominent London journalist who recently reviewed two books about WikiLeaks for the Sunday Times of London. When Mr. Hislop pointed out that Mr. Rusbridger was not Jewish, Mr. Assange countered that The Guardian's editor was sort of Jewish, unquote, because he and Mr. Lee, who is Jewish, were brothers-in-law. Well, anyone remotely familiar with The Guardian knows that it is fiercely critical of Israel and hardly an institution that could be intelligently tabbed as part of some sort of international Jewish or Zionist conspiracy. He also, that is to say, Assange, has also gone on to attack the BBC, which also had some critical comments about Assange slash WikiLeaks. And once again, the nature of the attack on the BBC was that the producer had a, quote, Zionist wife, unquote, who was apparently, according to Assange, the link between this BBC producer and this amorphous international Jewish or Zionist conspiracy that Assange claims he is the victim of. By the way, rather like the Guardian, the BBC is no friend of Israel, generally has a critical editorial stance towards Israel. Both the Guardian and BBC have been attacked for that or criticized for that in the past. So when Assange begins attempting to deflect criticism coming his way from The Guardian and from the BBC by accusing both of being Zionist or international Jewish conspiratorial elements, he is reaching, folks. Once again, from the Jewish Chronicle, this is a particular story from, I'll get you the exact date in the description for this, yet another Jewish Chronicle article from earlier in this year. A BBC producer accused by WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange of trying to influence his extradition hearing because he had a, quote, Zionist wife, unquote, has said the claim was absolutely ridiculous, unquote. Last month, Mr. Assange, fighting extradition to Sweden for alleged sexual assault, told Agoravox, a French news site, quote, our relationships are not that great, particularly with the BBC. They're going to broadcast a show and try to influence the judges. We finally found out that the producer's wife for this show was part of the Zionist movement in London. He was referring to the Panorama program, WikiLeaks, The Secret Story. Its producer Jim Booth, said this week, quote, I was the producer on the program, so he can only be talking about me. I have got no idea why he said that. My wife is not Jewish and has nothing to do with Zionism or the Jewish community. It's absolutely ridiculous and insulting for me as a producer. I do not set out with an agenda, and he gave the sense that there was a Jewish agenda. And again, that I think the criticism pretty much speaks for itself, but it's worth noting that the basic thrust of Assange's attempts at deflecting what, to all appearances, appears to be perfectly legitimate, even relatively muted criticism about some of the people he's associating with and some of the institutions with whom he has associated himself. Assange appears to resort to an almost reflexive Jew-baiting, and that in and of itself is characteristic of a Nazi point of view. In the second half of this broadcast, we're going to take a look at, once again, the possible links between Julian Assange and the family cult in Australia, the Santiketan and Park Association. However, what we're going to look at next concerns the leaking of the Guantanamo documents by WikiLeaks and the possibility that that might very well have compromised the potential raid against Osama bin Laden. Certainly, the documents that were released did give indications that the U.S. was on to the possible hideout of Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad in Pakistan. And as one incisive blog has indicated, that might very well have resulted in the moving up, the timing of the operation to neutralize Osama bin Laden. Well, and another very important element of this concerns the fact that these very same documents were highlighted by, once again, Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, publishing for Counterpunch. That is the publication of Alexander Coburn. The fact that someone like Coburn and others in the so-called progressive sector continue to access people like Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jermas, I think speaks volumes about just how far gone the so-called progressive sector is. Indeed, watching the whole WikiLeaks phenomenon, which is very unusual, it's interesting to watch the so-called progressive sector and darlings of the same, such as Daniel Ellsberg and others, oozing all over WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning. What they're basically doing is they're siding with what appears to be a Nazi propaganda and data mining operation, and Bradley Manning, shall we say, is other than represented. Bradley Manning, of course, is the U.S. Army soldier charged with espionage, and he is the alleged source of a number of leaks that made their way to WikiLeaks. Now, he has generally been lionized in the so-called progressive sector. Note my choice of words. A blog called The Extreme Liberals Blog did a very good piece of analysis about the nature of the files that Bradley Manning had released to WikiLeaks and pointed out that Bradley Manning is not a whistleblower, according to the definition of same. What Bradley Manning appears to have done is to have taken a number of files, loaded them onto his flash drive or a thumb drive, and he had not apparently examined a number of the files that he got a hold of. In other words, he was releasing information, in part at least, the very nature of which he had not bothered to research. That's not whistleblowing. And indeed, some of the things that have made their way onto WikiLeaks, such as the social security numbers of active duty American military personnel, could ultimately lead to Nazi and terrorist elements getting their hands on weapons of mass destruction. So again, the blog that we're about to excerpt here is significant for a couple of things. First of all, it points out that the leaking of documents by WikiLeaks, and Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jermas, was leaking these very same documents or publicizing them to Counterpunch, that the leaking of these documents might very well have compromised the Osama bin Laden raid and may have actually dictated the moving up of the timing of that raid. And also, Bradley Manning is not by any stretch of the imagination a whistleblower. A whistleblower is someone who observes wrongdoing and then comes forward in order to expose that wrongdoing. Simply grabbing a number of files, some of which could be very destructive if released, but grabbing a number of files you haven't examined and then secreting them away and releasing them to party or parties unknown, or party or third parties, I should say, that's not whistleblowing by any stretch of the imagination. So those two key points in this particular blog. One, the releasing of the WikiLeaks documents may very well have compromised the attempt at neutralizing Osama bin Laden. By the way, thereby serving the interests of the GOP and Karl Rove, as well as enemies of the United States and underground Reich elements, which were associated with the September 11th attacks and other terrorist incidents that are part of the same milieu. We're going to be talking about that, however, inside two of the program, because this concludes side one of For the Record program number 745, Wikifascism Part 2. This is being recorded on June 12th of the year 2011. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.